Welcome to Physicians Helping Attorneys Helping People. When people are injured due to negligence or while on the job, they need all the help they can get. Doctors Armin Feldman and Mike Bummer help ensure they get it. Join them as they discuss the newest medical subspecialty of medical legal consulting. Learn how attorneys can gain a competitive advantage in PI, workers' comp, and medical malpractice cases. Armin and Mike can help you better understand the medical issues in your cases, leading to larger settlement amounts and the best possible medical care for clients. They can help save you time and increase case value, all without breaking the bank. Let's get started.
Welcome to this episode of Physicians Helping Attorneys Helping People. I'm Dr. Armin Feldman, and as always, I'm here with my friend, colleague, and partner in Physicians Legal Consultants, Dr. Mike Bummer.
Hi, everyone. You know, there's something about spring, and I don't know what part of the country everyone's in as they listen, or maybe in a different country, but I feel like this energy, and I felt this energy when we got on when we hopped on video here about 5 or 10 minutes ago, Armin.
Yes. Well, I'm so happy that we both got the memo, Mike, that we were supposed to wear purple shirts today.
That's the first time that's happened.
Yeah, right. Maybe we will actually have to start sending memos.
Today's episode for our listeners should be fantastic. We have something a little different. We try to keep it fresh. Armin has two very specific, unique, a bit unusual cases that I'm going to kind of interview him about, and we're going to discuss the details of these, the input that he provided to his attorneys who asked him kind of specific questions about two or three different conditions, and we're just going to go through those cases. So please stick around, and if you want or have any questions about the cases, feel free to email us. It's the easiest way to find us at using comments with an S at the end at physicianshelpingattorneys.com. And we would also invite you to send us a connection on LinkedIn, Armin Feldman or Michael Bummer. And if you're on YouTube, make sure you subscribe, hit that bell so you get notifications of our new episodes. And if you're on the audio podcast, go ahead and follow us so that you're updated to our recent releases.
Great.
So the cases today, well, actually, before we even start into the case, I want to share one really cool victory from yesterday, Armin. I had a phone call. I didn't tell you about this.
Yeah.
And the attorney had sent me a case to review for merit, and he was suspicious of the real facts of the case, and he was going to be traveling to a distant part of the country that he wasn't a real big fan of in June for a trial. And he sent me the case because he knew I could quickly and affordably look through it and give him a lot of medical insights. And actually, it took 2 or 3 days, and I got back to him, and I listed about 7 or 8 things that I had significant issues with. And he said, and I should have had the phone recorder on or asked him, he said, "Gosh, doc, you saved me 2 weeks in one of my least favorite parts of the country and probably $5,000 to $10,000 on travel and work and hours. Thank you so much." Because I was afraid he was going to be a bit upset that I told him how bad the case was.
Right.
And
right.
He was being asked to co-counsel, and he really didn't want to do it. And I was able to provide him a lot of good reasons to sit this one out.
Yeah, that's great. You did save him time, money, and energy. And how long did that take you to
About
put together?
2 hours.
Well, that's just great.
Yeah. And then a 10-minute phone call with him.
Just great. Congrats on that. And I'm sure he's happy.
Love the feedback. It makes it all worthwhile. So,
yeah.
All right. So jumping in, Armin, why don't you start with the automobile case, the automobile crash that we talked about?
Okay. Let me just preface that, Mike. So Mike and I were talking about what our topic should be for this particular podcast, and we bounced a whole bunch of ideas around and finally came up with the idea that how about if we talk about something that's just on the fringe. It's on the bell curve. It's on that 2%. So it's not a typical auto case or a typical rotator cuff. And let's talk about some things that are a little bit more of an outlier. And in fact, in both of these cases, the reports that I wrote were to answer specific questions that the attorney had about the case, and not necessarily something that he was going to share with opposing counsel or an insurance company, like, for example, preparing a comprehensive medical summary report. This was more, I don't know if it actually was work product, but I think it probably was in both cases.
Perfect.
Okay. So this first, and I'll take you up on your suggestion. We'll talk about this automobile accident case first, but it has a couple of very unusual twists. So this is a case of a woman who lived up in the mountains, actually in the foothills outside of Denver. And she was traveling on a typical route for her, going west towards her home up in the mountains, and a car in the opposite car swerved into her lane. And so she had to swerve back to actually miss what might have been a head-on collision and swerved into the opposite lane. Well, she had to do this quickly. She lost control of the car. It hit a side rail. Luckily, it didn't go off the mountain, right? But I guess in this case may not have mattered. But and rolled over and wound up on the car facing with the wheels on the ground in her lane. And by the way, luckily the person that swerved over did stop. But and she had multiple injuries. She had multiple rib fractures. She broke both legs. She also had a partial amputation of one of her feet. And she, emergency personnel were called. First responders showed up. She told the first responders what I just told you about how the accident happened. And she had to be extracted from the car with jaws of life. And then she was taken by air ambulance, Flight for Life, to the closest big trauma center in Denver that's on the west side of town. Well, as the helicopter was setting down on the helipad at the hospital, she had a myocardial infarction, a heart attack, and she was rushed into the ER. They could not resuscitate her, and she died. So very sad situation. So what happened is that an autopsy was performed, and I'll get into just a few things in the autopsy in just a minute. But opposing counsel and opposing doctors were saying that the cause of death was coronary artery disease, atherosclerotic coronary artery disease, hardening of the arteries, right? Buildup of plaque in the arteries, and had nothing to do with the accident. That was their argument. And part of their argument was based on the fact that an autopsy was done. And the autopsy report stated that, I'm gonna look at the notes here so I get it right, but that the cause of death is consistent with heart failure secondary to coronary insufficiency due to severe atherosclerotic coronary artery disease. And as a byproduct, he almost says, the automobile accident is a possible contributory factor, and on the state of Colorado death certificate, the immediate cause of death was consistent with acute heart failure due to the consequence of cardiac insufficiency.
Was the car crash mentioned on the death certificate?
No.
Okay, but it was mentioned as a somewhat of a potential contributor on the autopsy report as like clinical context?
Yeah, the way it was phrased, it was kind of like an afterthought, you know, that maybe the car accident had something to do with it. I don't, you know.
Okay.
But the client died of a heart attack, you know, because she had coronary artery disease.
Which is not untrue, but it's a partial story.
Right. So I wrote in my report that it was my opinion to a reasonable degree of medical probability that the predominant cause of the client's death was massive trauma that caused acute heart failure. And I went on in the report to say, well, obviously by autopsy, it's clear that this woman had atherosclerotic heart disease. But the interesting thing is two things. One is she was completely asymptomatic. She had no symptoms. She didn't have intermittent chest pain. She didn't have angina. She didn't have shortness of breath. She didn't have shortness of breath on exertion. She had nothing that would suggest that she was going to imminently die from her coronary artery disease. One of the coronary arteries was fairly significantly obstructed, but it was still patent. The blood could still get through.
Mm-hmm.
So based on that, I said that in my report that this assumption that her death was due to coronary artery disease would assume that she would have died on that day, even if she hadn't been in an auto accident, right? Because that was the cause of her death. And I said in my report that that hypothesis seemed far-fetched at best.
I want you to come back to this, but this reminds me, we had a recent really interesting podcast case where I reviewed for one of our attorneys that involved that vasculitis, panvasculitis, where we had to find
right.
the expert, that the woman was hit traumatically by a bicycle and experienced this one of the largest traumatic events of her life. And then the following day had a systematic derangement that led
exactly.
to these widespread symptoms. And common sense would tell, you know, 99 out of 100 people that the two events are related, yet
right.
conveniently opposing counsel wants to separate them as two absolutely independent events.
Yes, exactly the same situation, Mike. So what I wrote in my report to the attorney is that a much more likely explanation for her sudden death after the auto accident was due to the release of chemicals called catecholamines. They're stress hormones like adrenaline that are released with physical trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, it's clear that she had constricted or compromised arteries, but it was the release of these stress hormones that temporarily caused the arteries to constrict, which is what happens when adrenaline and other mm-hmm. hormones are released. And so she had a temporary 100% occlusion of at least one and maybe more of her coronary arteries, and that was the reason that she had an acute heart attack immediately after the accident, and not that she was, you know, that it was destined that she was going to have a heart attack on this day because she had coronary artery disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so then I back that up with evidence from the literature. And again, forgive me, I may just quote from a couple of these articles, but there was an article titled Stressful Events as a Trigger to Sudden Death, a study of 43 medical legal autopsy cases. So this was actually autopsy cases, right? And they, in their conclusion, they said, quote, it appears from our autopsy study that stress-related sudden death, SSD, occurs primarily in those individuals with severe heart disease, especially coronary artery disease. So this is a scientific article that specifically backs up my theory, my hypothesis of what killed her, my theory for the case. Then I went on, I quoted another article from the literature that's called Homicide by Fright, The Intersection of Cardiology and Criminal Law. And in this article, it states case law clearly holds that sudden emotional stress can cause death. Well, obviously, having your, part of your foot amputated in an accident, other injuries, pain, certainly that's going to cause enough emotional stress in and of itself to cause the sudden death. There was another article called The Relationship Between Mortality and Pre-existing Cardiac Disease. And they state, we observe significant morbidity and mortality in patients with pre-existing cardiac disease who suffer severe traumatic injury. So there it is, right in the literature that supports what was my theory. By the way, it was my theory before I even went to the literature. It was nice to see that the literature was there to back it up. And then I added one more article that was called Cardiac Arrest Associated with Trauma. And in that article, it describes three different abnormal heart rhythms that occur in these situations. And one of them is called pulsus electrical activity. And that's what the client had when they did an EEG at the hospital when they were trying to resuscitate her. So I was backing up my opinion with five different articles from the literature that this theory that she just would have had a heart attack is nonsense. So in my conclusion to my report, I said, stating that the client died of heart failure due to coronary artery disease on the day she was involved in an auto accident in which she suffered massive trauma is like stating someone died from a lack of oxygen and not mentioning that they happened to have drowned. So
good analogy.
Yeah. And so I did get some feedback on this case, and the woman's family, but the plaintiffs did win their case. And part of it was based on, you know, my helping the attorney in this way.
Really interesting case, Armin. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
Anyone listening has any type of strange case that you want to just send by us to see if we want to contribute. If we're able to contribute, you can email us comments@physicianshelpingattorneys.com.
Great.
And so anything else you want to say on that before we jump to your second one?
No, I'm ready for the second one if you are.
I am. Let's do it. Okay. So tell us, it's definitely a different angle for a lot of reasons. So go ahead and tell us the introduction here.
Yeah. So as our listeners know, we answer questions that cover any medical question in a case. And this is quite far flung from coronary artery disease. So this is a case in which a 4.5-year-old boy touched a space heater in the house that was defective and got a very, very severe burn to one of his hands. And in fact, it resulted in a pretty obvious deformity of one of his hands from the burn. So maybe I'll just keep going through and it'll become self-evident. So one of the questions that the attorney wanted to ask is, can a boy of this age develop post-traumatic stress disorder? And what I learned when I went to the literature is there are actually differing opinions concerning that question in the literature, someone that young develops post-traumatic stress disorder or not. Although it was when I went to the literature, young boy certainly met the criteria for childhood PTSD. But I thought that that might become something of a problem of a sticky wicket if that was the only direction that the attorney had to go. So what I did next is, I said, let's look at this problem from a different direction. And the problems that this boy was having at this age, I think he was 7 or 8. He was fire setting. He was getting into fights with fellow students at school. he was withdrawn. He had a lack of interest in things. And by the time he was this age, he'd also been diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and bipolar disorder. So now the question becomes, well, and he was hospitalized psychiatrically one time too, by the way. So the question becomes, well, is his behavior at all attributable to the burn and the deformity that he got from the defective space heater, or does he just have these psychiatric problems and it's a non-issue?
It's a complicated question.
Yeah. So what I said to the attorney is, let's not get stuck in the weeds about whether or not the young boy had childhood post-traumatic stress disorder. Let's look at it from a different direction. And what I suggested is that we look at it from more of a psychoanalytic perspective and what was unconsciously going on. So what I said in my report is that in some basic way, although it certainly wouldn't be used for psychiatric diagnosis, but in some basic way, we can divide all psychiatric illnesses based on our current level of knowledge and understanding and biochemistry and so forth as either being biochemical or being psychological. Now, obviously, in the final, Freud said this in 1905, in the final analysis, all of our behavior is biochemical, right? But we break down behaviors into, are they primarily biochemical behavior disorders or psychological disorders? So, for example, personality disorders, those are psychological disorders based on problems that happened in childhood. Major depression recurrent, that's really felt to be an abnormality in biochemistry with serotonin, epinephrine, dopamine, and so forth that can be successfully treated with medications. So it was my opinion that in this case, you didn't even have to argue about the PTSD. You could just say that he had a psychological problem due to the burn itself and the disformity he had. Now, what's key to that is that this boy had no problems. He was doing well until he started school. So he met all of his developmental milestones. He seemed to be pretty good on everyday human interaction. And then he started school. And so it was my opinion, and the way I thought the attorney could handle the case is that once this boy was exposed to normal social interaction by going to school, he experienced himself as different. I'm sure he was teased. I'm sure he was shunned because of his deformity. And that caused him to have difficulty getting along with others because he himself would perceive himself as different. And it created in him a serious problem of an impaired sense of self. And in psychiatry and in psychoanalysis, there are a whole series of self disorders, disorders of the self. And one that may be more common and more that people more know more about is, for example, is a borderline personality disorder. But so it was my opinion that this I did give it a diagnosis later, but this disorder of the self and made him not only feel different, but also had him had him with significant problems in self-esteem, which is one of the bedrocks of normal behavior and growing up. There's a whole spectrum, right? But in a normal way.
Do you know how the attorney used your conclusions?
Yes. At the end of the report, I'm getting ahead of myself, but at the end of the report, what I suggested was that I said to the attorney, there may be one or two or three or who knows, five experts in this, but what you need is someone who's an expert in childhood PTSD and also probably a child psychoanalyst. And that combination of PTSD and a child psychoanalyst could make this argument a lot better than I just did, right? And this is an accepted way to look at psychiatric diseases and problems, right, that are caused by events in life. So what I said is that if you understand it in this context, it's much easier to attribute the client's disfigurement and the consequences of the burn as a problem of self rather than ADHD or bipolar disorder. I also made the argument that the behavioral problem started way before the diagnoses of ADHD and bipolar disorder came up. So it's much more likely temporally that it's related to the self disorder. So I said, you know, it doesn't, I didn't say it in these words, but you don't have to be Sigmund Freud to make the leap to the kid gets burned, has a severe traumatic experience, gets deformed, feels different socially, and then his starting to be a fire setter, right? That this is, obviously it would be unconscious, but this is his way of trying to put into reality and deal with this thing that happened earlier in his life and get some kind of control over it. I mean, that just seems like common sense, right?
It does, but it takes a medical opinion to tie that together for our attorney clients.
Yeah, yeah. So so that was my opinion, that the fire setting and the other disruptive behavior and the extreme psychiatric condition. Now, the final question he wanted me to answer was, can you put some kind of objective marker on what's what? And I said, I think that's probably, I didn't say it in these words, but I think that's probably impossible. But he does have three psychiatric diagnoses. So I said, if you want to objectify it in terms of percentage and, you know, financial damages and so forth, that at least one third of his problems could be attributable to the faulty space heater and the subsequent events that happened.
I'm sure that was very helpful. What a wild case.
Yeah. So, you know, as often happens, Mike, we didn't... I didn't get the follow-up in that case, which is usually the case. I mean, the attorneys don't, when we don't feel that they're obliged to, but they don't feel obliged to come back and tell us how our reports, we're happy when we get that feedback, but yeah, how our reports helped their case. But I would assume that he found that person, you know, that has a specialty in childhood post-traumatic stress disorder and is also a child psychoanalyst.
Well, thanks for sharing these cases today.
They're both outliers, right? They're both unusual cases that require thought, analysis, and our ability to take a look at the literature and then draw our own medical opinions that I think help the attorney, the injured person in the case.
Yep. Well, if you're an attorney listening and you have anything you want to ask us, feel free to reach out, email us, find us on LinkedIn, or make a comment below the video on YouTube. Armin, before we wrap up for the day, We were chatting last week. You actually, it's already toward the end of March. In April, you have a course coming up, maybe for our physician listeners who might be interested. Would you mind quickly sharing that?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Thanks for bringing that up. Yes, the next offering of my medical legal consulting online course training starts Monday, April 1st. And the course is over 8 weeks, but there are 4 2-week consecutive modules. And in each module, there are 4 on-demand videos and associated download materials. And then at the end of each 2-week period, I do a live Q&A by Zoom to answer questions for the physicians taking the course. So this is a crash course, even though it's over 8 weeks, it's a crash course in how to do this kind of medical legal consulting. And so if you have an interest in that, unfortunately, the URL for the website is long. But if you type in Armin Feldman and medical legal online course April 1st into Google, you'll get to the website.
That's awesome. Thanks, Armin. I got a vouch for your trainings. They are super professional, really detailed, much like as the listeners hear you in describing these cases. Your experience speaks for itself. And if someone's considering it, I got to say, just try it out, do it. You'll learn a lot quickly.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, that's all I got. So I'm going to kind of say till next time, and I'll let you take us out.
Okay. So if you're an attorney and you have a case, or if you're a listener who's not an attorney and you have a comment you'd like to give us or some feedback you'd like to give us, be sure to email us at comments@physicianshelpingattorneys.com. And we really look forward to having you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to Physicians Helping Attorneys Helping People. For more information about the show and to listen to all the podcast episodes, go to physicianshelpingattorneys.com. You can also email Armin and Mike at comments@physicianshelpingattorneys.com.